Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really fascinating legal knot from Florida's past. It actually still has implications for how we think about environmental funding and, you know, constitutional law.
Mm-hmm.
We're plunging into the 1973 case of State v. Division of Bond Finance. Now, for you law students tuning in, this is, well, it's more than just an old case citation.
Absolutely.
It's a prime example of how specific constitutional provisions can really pave the way for crucial policy initiatives.
Yeah, exactly. And this case highlights a fundamental aspect of constitutional interpretation,
mm-hmm.
how courts reconcile different parts of the same foundational document. It's about understanding not just the words themselves, but also the underlying logic and, like, the evolving will of the people as expressed through amendments.
Okay, so let's set the stage. Picture 1973 Florida. The state recognizes a pressing need, a really urgent need, to address pollution, things like cleaning up waterways, managing waste.
Hmm.
You know the drill. To finance this, they wanted to issue a significant amount, $58.9 million in bonds. Now, here's the kicker. They plan to back these bonds with the full financial weight of the state, its full faith and credit, without asking voters in a referendum.
And that's where the legal friction ignited. I mean, the state attorney challenged this move, arguing that the Florida Constitution generally requires a direct vote by the public before the state can take on such substantial debt backed by its full financial commitment.
Makes sense.
The circuit court initially sided with the state. They approved the bonds, which then led to this appeal before the Florida Supreme Court.
So the core question we're dissecting today is this.
Mm.
Did the Florida Constitution, as it stood back in 73, contain a specific exception to this general requirement for voter approval, specifically for bonds aimed at environmental protection? That's the central legal puzzle here.
Mm.
And for you listening, this isn't just about some, you know, 50-year-old Florida case. It's about understanding how constitutions are living documents that can adapt to address pressing needs, sometimes by creating specific exceptions to general rules. Keep that in mind as we dive deeper.
Exactly. To understand the court's reasoning, we really need to look at the key pieces of the Florida Constitution involved here. We have Article 7, Sections 11A and 12A. Now, these sections lay down the general rule. If the state is going to issue bonds backed by its full faith and credit,
which basically means promising its full financial resources.
Right.
Makes them very secure.
Yeah, precisely. It's a big commitment. So these sections say that usually requires a vote by the people. These are broad foundational rules about state debt.
Right. Those are the standard checks and balances you'd expect. But then you have Article 7, Section 14. This was added to the Constitution after Sections 11A and 12A, and it deals specifically with pollution control bonds.
Uh-huh.
And crucially, it allows for the issuance of these particular types of bonds without a mandatory referendum. So you can immediately see the potential for conflict.
Oh, yeah.
And the need for the court to interpret how these different parts of the Constitution interact.
Precisely. This sets up a classic scenario in legal interpretation. What happens when you have a general rule and then a more specific rule that seems to, you know, create an exception?
Right.
The fundamental legal principle at play here is that when you have a specific provision addressing a particular issue, it often takes precedence over a more general provision that might otherwise apply. So for you, the key insight here is that legal interpretation often involves navigating these layers of rules, looking for the most precise instruction.
Okay, so let's break down the state attorney's argument then. They're essentially
yeah.
saying, look, the Constitution clearly states that bonds backed by the state's full faith and credit need voter approval. This is a general principle, and it should apply here regardless of what the bonds are for.
That was their core argument, essentially. They were emphasizing the importance of democratic control over state debt. Their concern, understandably, was about ensuring that the public has a direct say when the state commits significant financial resources. You know, they argued that the general referendum requirements in sections 11A and 12A should be the controlling rules in this situation.
Okay, so how did the Florida Supreme Court respond to that?
Yeah.
What was their main line of reasoning in upholding the bond issuance without a vote?
Well, the court's central argument was that Section 14, being the more recent and specifically focused amendment dealing with pollution control bonds, had to take precedence in this particular context. They stressed the legal principle that a later, more specific law, and in this case, a constitutional amendment, can create an exception to an earlier, more general law.
Mm-hmm.
They emphasized that when the people, through the amendment process, add something to their constitution, that represents the last expression of the people's will. It's the most up-to-date set of instructions for the state, essentially.
That makes logical sense. It's like updating a company policy, the newest version usually overrides what came before, doesn't it? So the court wasn't saying the older rules were irrelevant, but that they took a back seat in this very specific scenario. That's a crucial distinction for us to understand.
Exactly. The court wasn't dismissing the general importance of voter approval for state debt. Not at all. However, they recognized that the people, through the amendment process of adding Section 14, had intentionally created a specific pathway for funding environmental initiatives that bypassed the usual referendum requirement.
Okay. So beyond just pointing to the timing and specificity of Section 14, what other reasons did the court give for their decision? What were the key pillars supporting this exception?
They articulated three main justifications, really. The first, as we've kind of touched on, was textual clarity. Section 14 explicitly names pollution control and abatement as a purpose for which bonds can be issued. And crucially, it doesn't include any language mandating a referendum for these specific bonds. The absence of that requirement was a significant point for the court. They looked at the plain words and basically said, if the framers of this amendment intended a referendum, they would have included that language.
Right. The principle of expressio unius est exclusio ulterius, the express mention of one thing implies the exclusion of another. Like if they didn't say it, they didn't mean it for this specific case.
Exactly. The second key reason was legislative intent. The court considered the purpose behind adding Section 14 to the Constitution in the first place. The historical context suggested a clear desire to make it easier and faster for the state to fund what were recognized as urgent environmental protection projects.
So speed was a factor.
Definitely. The amendment was intended to remove a potential obstacle of the time and uncertainty associated with a statewide vote for these critical initiatives. And it's striking to hear that this concern was already so prominent half a century ago, and it's clearly only intensified since then.
That really underscores the evolving understanding of environmental responsibility and, well, the need for swift action sometimes.
It really does. And the third justification was the fundamental legal principle of the hierarchy of laws. Think of it like this. The Constitution is at the top, right?
Right.
Then you have statutes passed by the legislature and then case law interpreting those. So a constitutional amendment, being the highest form of law, naturally takes precedence over a general statutory requirement or even an older constitutional provision if they conflict.
Yeah.
Section 14, being a later constitutional amendment specifically addressing environmental bonds, was seen as superior to and thus overriding the general referendum requirements in this specific context.
So textual clarity, legislative intent focused on addressing an urgent need, and the established legal hierarchy, those were the core arguments the court relied on. Pretty solid.
Precisely. And the court's opinion itself offered some powerful insights. Acting Chief Justice Roberts wrote a particularly notable statement. An amendment is the last expression of the will of the lawmaking power. Prior provisions inconsistent therewith are modified.
Okay, let's unpack that quote a bit. What's the crucial message there? It sounds important.
It really emphasizes the ultimate authority of constitutional amendments. When the people, through the established amendment process, change their fundamental governing document, those changes have real legal force. They can alter or even supersede previous parts of the Constitution that are in conflict with the new amendment.
So it modifies them.
Yes. In this case, it meant that Section 14 effectively adjusted the general rules for bond approval, specifically when it came to pollution control.
So it wasn't that the older sections of the Constitution were, like, erased or anything. Just that their application was limited in this specific area of environmental bonds because of the newer amendment. That's an important nuance, I think.
Exactly. The court also made a point of noting that the Division of Bond Finance had adhered to all the procedural requirements outlined in the relevant Florida statute, Section 403.1834. That statute provided the legal framework for issuing these pollution control bonds.
Okay.
They highlighted that the state had followed the necessary steps at the statutory level as well.
So it wasn't solely about the constitutional exception. The state also made sure it was complying with the relevant state laws governing the bond issuance itself, dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Absolutely. Another interesting detail, perhaps, is that the legal challenge originated solely from the state attorney. No private citizens, no environmental groups or other entities intervened to object to the bond issuance.
Huh.
Now, while that wasn't a direct factor in the court's legal reasoning, it perhaps hints at a general lack of public opposition to the environmental goals these bonds aim to achieve.
That's a good point. It suggests maybe the core of the dispute was more about the legal process, the constitutional question, rather than the actual merits of the environmental projects themselves.
Precisely. And finally, it's important to remember the financial backing of these bonds. They weren't solely dependent on future income generated by the pollution control projects themselves, you know, the revenue streams.
Right.
They were also secured by the full faith and credit of the state of Florida, which, as we said, underscores the state's significant financial commitment.
Okay, so this ruling allowed Florida to proceed with these crucial environmental projects back then. But why should a case from way back in 1973 still grab the attention of law students today? I mean, what's its enduring significance?
Well, State v. Division of Bond Finance established a vital precedent. It demonstrated that states, through constitutional amendments, could prioritize funding for essential environmental infrastructure without the automatic requirement of voter referendums. It provided a mechanism for, let's say, more streamlined financing in areas deemed to be of critical public importance.
But this raises a really interesting question, I think, especially for you law students listening. Doesn't this prioritization of efficiency, this bypassing of a direct popular vote, potentially create a tension with democratic accountability? I mean, how do we balance the need for decisive action with the principle of public consent?
That's a crucial point for critical thinking, definitely. The court, in its decision, essentially weighed this balance and ultimately favored allowing the exception. They emphasized that pollution control was considered a paramount public purpose.
Paramount public purpose. That phrase sounds key.
It was key to justifying the specific constitutional exception. It implies that certain issues might be so fundamentally important that they warrant a more direct funding approach. But, you know, who decides what constitutes a paramount public purpose? Isn't there a risk that this could be used to bypass democratic processes for other issues that some might deem equally critical? These are the kinds of questions this case provokes.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think about how we address other pressing public needs today. Could this case offer insights into funding mechanisms for contemporary challenges, like the climate resilience initiatives we're seeing gain traction?
Absolutely. I think this case provides a framework for understanding how states can adapt their constitutional structures to address evolving priorities. It highlights the dynamic interplay between direct democracy and the need for efficient governance in tackling critical societal issues.
So for law students wrestling with the intricacies of constitutional interpretation, What's the main takeaway from this deep dive into State v. Division of Bond Finance?
I think the fundamental lesson is how to approach conflicts between different provisions within a constitution. The general principle that the more specific and more recent provision typically prevails is really a cornerstone of legal interpretation. It's about understanding the hierarchy and the evolutionary nature of constitutional law.
So it's not about arbitrarily choosing one part of the Constitution over another, but about really understanding the relationship between different provisions and how subsequent amendments can shape their application in specific contexts.
Precisely. And maybe a final thought for you to ponder. Given the court's strong emphasis on pollution control as a paramount public purpose, justifying a streamlined funding process, what other contemporary challenges might warrant similar specific constitutional exceptions for funding or action? It's a question worth exploring further on your own, I think.
Absolutely. So to recap our deep dive into State v. Division of Bond Finance, we've explored the constitutional conflict, the principle of specific over general provisions, the court's rationale grounded in textual clarity, legislative intent, and legal hierarchy, and the enduring relevance of this case for environmental financing and constitutional interpretation.
And hopefully it's provided you with some valuable insights into how constitutional law evolves to meet critical societal needs and, you know, the ongoing dialogue surrounding efficiency versus democratic accountability.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Oh.
Until our next exploration.